Welcome to another episode of Financial Markets Insights. I'm your host, David Burney, and today I'm joined by someone who not only leads one of the most sophisticated market data platforms in Europe, but who also, I recently learned, went to a better school than me in Romford in Essex. Just for Debbie's defence, she did go there a lot later than I did. Debbie Kay, Head of UK Trading at Iress, welcome to Financial Markets Insights.
Thank you, David, and thank you for having me.
So let's dive straight in. You run what I know from the inside to be an enormous operation. So where did I start from? How did you first get into financial markets and trading tech from a background in Romford? And what made you carry on and spark this interest in?
Well, I started my career way back in the mid-90s. I originally worked for a software company called Braid Systems. They provided fax and telex. So that's how obviously old I am. So I started off in that industry back in a place in Victoria through various acquisitions that ended up being owned by IBM in 2003. Obviously not still selling fax and telex modems because obviously technology had moved on by then and become a little bit more electronic, and it's even more electronic today. Part of that IBM business split up and I moved across to a company, a Northern Irish company called Singularity. And we kept our clients and we kept the offering. And then I got tapped up by the London Stock Exchange in 2008 to come over and head up their customer service, support, admin operations team for ProQuote, which is a business that was owned by the London Stock Exchange. The rest, should we say, is history, because Iress bought ProQuote and the London Stock Exchange Fixed Gateway from the London Stock Exchange in November 2015. And here I am 10 years later, heading up the UK trading business.
Great background. Actually interesting. This current role for the trading and market data at Iress, describe the kind of scope of that for the TMD division for those people who don't know it.
So the scope of that role is running the whole of the UK operations, so managing the P&L, managing the operations, the commercial, the support, the implementations, looking at strategy, looking and working across the Iress group as a whole, headquartered in Australia. So I report directly into an LT member over in Australia. We have offices in Canada, in Singapore, in South Africa. So quite a lot of my role is working internationally with my relevant peers in those areas, talking about what's happening in their industry, what we need to do to keep up with our products and how we can innovate and bring the new and latest technology to our trading floors.
So what were some of the pivotal moments along the Iress journey then? London Stock Exchange steps out of the way and you end up at Iress. What happened?
I think one of the probably standouts has to be when Iress bought ProQuote from the LSE. I think change is scary, right? And the outcomes at the time, to you personally, always seem very unknown and quite daunting. What you get exposed to along the way through the sale of a business, and then how you get kind of adopted into a new business, and then how you're allowed to kind of spread your wings and fly, has probably been a bit of a turning point for my career. I'm so passionate about our clients, and the clients that we had at the LSE are still clients of ours today. So I think my passion just probably pushed me to where I am to be in this position today.
Cool. So for those that don't know, your division is called TMD. And what does TMD cover?
So it covers trading, market data and connectivity. So we offer a market data platform. It's a real-time terminal screen. Corporates can subscribe to receive real-time market data. Complementing that, we have a trading application, a couple of trading applications for both the buy side and the sell side. So whether you're buying or selling shares through the system. And we also have a connectivity layer. So the piece that kind of knits it all together. You can buy all three pieces independently, depending on what type of business you're running. Or in some cases, we provide solutions that offer that whole suite of what we class as TMD products. So market data, trading and connectivity.
And RSP. I mean, I know the RSP network, but for those people who don't know what RSP is, you've got 24 market makers, you get 80% of retail flow. Talk about RSP to those that don't know it.
Yeah, let's be clear. RSP network in the UK is very unique. We don't capture 80% of the total UK flow. We capture 80% of a percentage of the total UK retail flow. So when the LSE send their stats out, I think we're probably positioned about 15% of the flow is managed by the RSP, of which we traverse 80% of that. It's mostly made up of retail execution houses, traditional stockbroking arms or businesses, and some wealth managers, and they use the Irish trading platform to access the RSP network. As you said, 24 market makers sit on the sell side of this network, and they respond to a request for quote for competing prices in stocks that they offer liquidity in. Typical AIM stocks, your FTSE 100, your FTSE 250, your 350. And more broadly now, we're offering some other asset classes via that network, which is covering ETFs, fixed income, gilts, as well as some international coverage on CREST-denominated instruments. We've had market makers on this network that have been with Iris well before my time at the London Stock Exchange. We've had new ones come on board. We've had some that have unfortunately been liquidated and some that have now consolidated. So we have a number of people that have extensive knowledge in both the buy side and the sell side. And they've not only worked in technology, but they've also come from the client side. So they know how the markets work and what is needed, which is why this is becoming even more of a bigger asset than what it probably was 10 years ago at the LSE.
So in practical terms, what does the RFP deliver brokers? I can tell you, I know what it happens for the retail or the wealth manager. Very quick, very easy, very electronic. Removing quite a lot of time from the trader's desk. But for the brokers, what's the advantage there?
The life cycle of a trade from request to quote to order to execution report, you can do that in milliseconds. But also for the broker, what it offers is best execution. You can prove best execution by using the RSP network. 24 market makers, all competing for a price. The best price comes back. We're always looking at the price against touch, so you can never trade outside of touch unless you set the parameters to do that, but that would be parameters on your side that you would control. So the most important part of the RSP network is, for quite a lot of the organisations, the best execution element. When you go to some of these direct brokers, which we do have as much access to as we need, going direct to a broker is a single trade. What you're doing on your best execution alongside that, you have no kind of view on. When you do the RSP, you can see all the quotes and all the prices returned. So, you know, you're hitting the best execution buttons.
Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, also, I think from a brokerage perspective, it's relatively cheaper than trying to interact a lot of other ways and fast. So you also talked about this connectivity layer, but the new Fix Hub is something you're really working on now, isn't it? Tell us about that.
Yeah, it's really exciting. This is a fully cloud agnostic Fix Hub. We've got loads of different FIX networks and hubs within Iris, so we're consolidating them all into one globally, which is our cloud native IFH, which represents Iris FIX Hub. You can reach any broker on our network. It's a hub and spoke network. If you want to connect someone in Australia or South Africa or the United States of America, we've got AWS locations all around the world. If you're on board with us and you want to add on another broker, you can do it same day. I know in the past when we've onboarded clients before for typical broker connections, buy side, sell side, you can be looking at weeks. Now, I wouldn't say that's a single day if you're onboarding a brand new broker that has algo suite of products. Obviously, we need to certify those algos and bring them onto our network. But in general, it's a very quick onboarding tool that we're very proud of and looking to grow that substantially over the coming months and years.
And I guess you're also using that for when you put your systems into a client's office.
100%. IFH for us is the way forward for sure.
So with over 80 sell-side broker links integrated into DMA execution, how do you balance the different demands of retail and institutional? Do they conflict?
Well, we're very client-led. We remain very focused on the tasks in hand. We work with our customers to understand their needs. So when we get onto onboarding, certifying and go live, we execute with precision. So each client setup is unique, but Iris builds once and it builds once only. And obviously every single client has a little bit of a nuance on there. So they don't conflict. They're different demands, they're different needs. But the technology that we've built now allows us to build it once and then push it out with ease. So there's no conflict when it comes to implementation and demands from different clients.
So retail, I kind of think of as, when I think of a wealth manager, a high number of relatively low value tickets, and institutional, a lower number of tickets, but higher average order size. Do they use the same network? Is there any difference between how they route through your hub and everything else that you have?
It depends on the client, like you say, the kind of difference between retail, high net worth clients and, you know, high frequency traders. It depends on the style of their trading. You can connect not only to the RSP, which is predominantly UK coverage, but what we're seeing more and more is clients connecting to various different algo providers and, you know, sending one order and it's sliced and diced into so many different shapes in the market. And, you know, 100,000 execution reports can come back. Maybe that's a bit of a slight exaggeration on 100,000, but, you know, one order doesn't equal one execution report. So what we've seen over a number of years is the way that clients are trading is changing. If we wind back the clock 10 years, when I was at the London Stock Exchange, most of our clients used to trade directly on book. That's changed a lot over the years and probably swung the other way with clients trading directly via brokers. Liquidity access via those brokers is a lot vast. The pools that they can play in and the algorithms that are available to them are a lot more sophisticated now to get the right outcome for the client. So there's different ways that people are trading, and what we can do and what we are doing via the power of IFH or via the power of our systems is getting you to that destination you want to get to or getting you to that liquidity venue that you want to get to.
It's interesting. The other thing that I thought was, when I started delving, was probably more developed than I realised, the multi-asset piece. So multi-asset order routing, use the same underlying technology for all asset classes, and how does that work?
Yeah, we do use the same underlying technology. What we're seeing, though, is, you know, if you roll back as far as the early 90s, probably, there was a lot of independent, different asset class trading desks. You'd have your futures, you'd have your options, you'd have your FX, you'd have your currency, and they'll be split by South Africa, USD. What you're seeing now, I think, is one desk, one platform. But that platform can trade multi-asset. The inputs, the trade still has to come in, the trade still has to go out. What the system does and how it integrates with the requirement of that asset class and who that asset class is pushed to is different. But actually, in general, people are looking for a platform and not various platforms to connect to multi-asset venues.
Yeah, definitely true. So moving over to data then, how do you manage the balance between real-time market feeds and the growing demand for historical analytics?
We work a lot with our clients, understand what they want to see, what they want to view on the desktop or via a web services API, which is becoming more and more common. Understanding the strategy and where they're going as organizations then feeds into our product development and roadmaps. As you can imagine, servicing quite a number of clients globally could then create quite a lot of number of requests coming in for consideration. And what we want to do is make sure there's demand there for anything that we do and that we're doing it in the right way.
So what are the two or three biggest shifts you've seen in capital markets technology over the past 12 months, Debbie? And actually, what's most overrated?
One of the ideas, things that our clients are thinking was build versus buy, was do I go to trade or invest in thinking about offering digital assets? Is it about moving to the cloud? Is it about moving to AI? You asked for 2 to 3, I gave you 4. But the first one around build versus buy is more of a conversational thing that's been in the industry for quite a long time. Do clients think it's better to build their own tech or partner with somebody? And it depends on, you know, if you're talking to a wealth manager or you're talking to an execution house, depends on the results. That conversation, though, I think has massively moved on, and it's still there. It's still very much build versus buy or buy versus build. But there's so many other things that are being thrown at these organizations at the moment with regards to, you know, new tech coming out, with regards to AI, with regards to digital assets, tokenized assets, different ways to trade. Should we still have trading desks? Should we send everything electronic? That the way the conversation moves and gravitates kind of probably changes between all of those 3 to 4 points in any 1 or 2 hour meeting that we have with the client. And I think what is clear to say is all of those items are on the agenda, but what way they tackle them and in what order they tackle them is different depending on each client.
Is there anywhere that budgets are moving more towards?
I think there's always budgets in compliance and regulation. Surprise, surprise, I think everyone's super aware of, particularly here in the UK, what next FCA regulation or rule is potentially going to hit. We always find if, you know, you can get to the risk or compliance department, there's budget there. But I think probably from a trading perspective, the desks kind of either pay for their own individual license or maybe the small commission amounts that they make kind of pay for themselves. But there's no kind of budgets really held at the trading desks. It's all more about where they are with regards to compliance and regulation.
Yeah, I think actually interesting, Gen AI or AI generally was the second point. So are there use cases that are genuinely in production and moving the needle, or have some of them disappointed?
I think everyone's moving in the trading world at a cautious rate, but there is definitely AI technology that can help out in some areas. I don't think it's going to accelerate as fast in other areas because you still need that emotional decision. You still need that emotional state of mind to press play on something other than a computer telling you what to invest in and how to invest. So I think AI for us is something that we are absolutely staying close to, and we'll be very keen and interested to see how clients are adopting it more in the front office than the back office.
Moving on, interoperability versus consolidation. Like, are firms choosing best of breed individual pieces, or do they want to buy a single vendor solution and have everything from one place? You seen any movement in that?
Yeah, that's another good question. Completely depends on the audience. We've got some clients that are definitely best in breed, one size fits all, never going to move from that. But we are seeing more of our clients buy something that would complement what they've got, which would be obviously the interoperability for the front ends and trading technologies and the clients that we talk to, partners specifically. You know, how can we accelerate their sales? How can they accelerate our sales? It's being very well received within our clients. If they can log on to one system and we can reach multiple different systems with one single log on by using the power of interoperability, they would love that to happen.
In the industry, what do you hear? Where does integration kind of blow up?
I haven't personally heard of any blow-up situation with interoperability. I think people are still moving a little bit like with AI, with extreme caution. And with all the risk and compliance and the regulation that you have to jump through with hoops internally within an organisation and then externally, and then you have the GDPR regulations on top of that, we have to be really careful about what we're touching and why we're touching anything these days. So I haven't personally seen anything blow up, but I think that's probably because people are moving at a very slow pace and being very mindful of what could happen and trying to mitigate that well in advance of it happening.
I mean, is there anything particular, data standards or APIs, that they, your people, people you talk to, are demanding by default? Is there something they all say, oh, it needs to be able to do this? API integration seems to be one.
Yeah, API integration definitely seems to be more and more of the kind of buzzword that we're hearing now. I think Fix is there. It's an industry standard. It's been around for a long time. Not every organisation in the whole of, you know, capital markets uses Fix, but some people do have API integration. API integration, though, does come with understanding what data you're taking, what data you're scraping, and whether you're allowed to do that. Again, back to the point about whether that's regulatory or compliance or anything like that, it comes into play there.
Yeah. Regulation, always present, right? So what is coming down the road of DORA or operational resilience, faster settlement cycles? Are you getting questions on that, or what's that doing to shape people's thoughts about tech priorities?
I think tech priority buzz in the industry at the moment we're hearing is the ability to trade 24/7. DORA has been on gone. It's a regulation change. It came in at the beginning of January. With most companies have amended their contracts to appease the DORA requirements. What we are hearing more and more is the ability for clients to trade 24/7. And that's kind of continuous trading. So T+1 will hit in a couple of years' time. For us, from a trading venue standpoint, orders will execute T+1. We'll probably eventually in a world move to T+0 or T0, or however we want to wrap that up. They are things that our systems will cope with. I think there's a lot of work for any organisation in the back office to move to T+1. And that is a humongous effort in terms of power, time, speed, etc., to meet that regulation. So that we know that's coming. And with the power of 24/7, it kind of negates the T+1 anyway, because if you can trade 24/7, you kind of got everything wrapped up into one.
Yeah, and T+1 from a kind of an industry perspective, most people who are going to build something for T+1 are actually going to build for T0 and slow it down. And actually that works particularly well if you look at 24/7 or actually some of the buzzwords are 24/5, because what happens if you trade at 11:59 p.m.? You've got a minute and a bit. You're absolutely right. T+1 and 24/7 are nearly in every conversation you talk about.
And the other thing we hear more and more often now from all sides, buy side, sell side, all the segments that we service, is the power of data. The power of being able to play back the data. well, what is the data analytics? What is the data insights? What is the market intelligence? You know, we sit on quite a golden source of data. Clients want to know that market intelligence. They want to know what happened if I potentially have traded 5 minutes earlier. Potentially, you know, what happens if I didn't trade that stock today, but I traded it in 3 days' time. They want the power of data analytics. I personally think in capital markets as a whole, and that has been shifting and changing for the last 6 to 9 months, but I would say accelerating more and more in the last 3 months.
And above data itself, data quality, because actually anything AI related is so dependent on the quality.
Absolutely.
Cool. So, contrarian time. What have you or I got as a belief about markets and technology which we think is wrong? What's the implication if we're right and the current line of thinking is wrong? I actually am going to chuck one in first of all and think 24/7 comes, T0 comes. So is 24/5 wrong?
I don't think 24/5 can be right, but just because of the time zone difference across the world. If you're extending trading hours in the US, you're trading pretty much to 1 a.m. Saturday morning. Come Sunday in the UK, you know, markets are already opening up in New Zealand by Sunday night. They're opening New Zealand, they're opening Australia by the turn of the clock. So I think that kind of moves you more into a 24/6, but I think 24/5 is wrong. 24/7 is a little bit too much. All systems, I think, and I believe, need to have some sort of reboot time, refresh time. So I think this has to be a window where you can, you know, just maintain a 10-minute downtime to just refresh the systems. So I think maybe I'm morphing into more of a 24/6. So if I'm right and I haven't painted that, I probably need to do that quite quickly.
I mean, the problem is digital trades 24/7. I think crypto trades 24/7, but so I'll go with 24/6. That sounds good. Is there any implication if we go 24/6? What does that matter to the world?
24/6 support means that for any technology provider or any client offering that level of trading, if something goes wrong in that window, who are you going to call? Where are you going to call? And do they know what the issue is? The power of technology, obviously the move to the cloud, you know, you should never have a downtime going forward now. But, you know, not always is it so black and white in the world of tech that systems can be available 24/6. And not always is it black and white that someone wants to take that as granted. Someone somewhere would always still like the old-fashioned phone call or chat service where they know that, you know, they're talking to a human being behind that and everything is right in what they're assuming or their assumptions that they've made through the life cycle of a particular trade at that given period of time. So I think it's going to be interesting. Yes, we could. Tech companies can provide 24/6, 24/7 trading, but what happens when something goes wrong? Someone always wants to speak to somebody, and someone wants to speak to someone with knowledge and not just a recording answering message. Press one if I've got a fix issue, two if you've got a trading issue, three if you've got, they want to speak to somebody, and I think that's never going to go away.
So finally, what's the one piece of advice you'd offer someone building or modernising a trading desk or market data platform today?
Look to integrate with a trusted partner. Do your due diligence, what is available. There are some very impressive window shops out there, but work with someone that you can trust. We've built very good relationships with our clients over the years, and we are a very trusted partner. And that echoes around the team that I have. You know, we're very passionate about what we do. And anyone coming into this world, into this trading market, do your due diligence and find someone that you can really trust and invest in.
That's true. So, as we end our time, I think that's been a brilliant chat. I'd like to thank Debbie for her time and enthusiasm. I hope you found it insightful and interesting. And if you did, then please subscribe to our FMI podcast channel for future episodes. Debbie, thank you very much.
Thank you, Dave.